Our shrink is in the house, Dr. John Duffy. He's been stopping by a lot during the pandemic. That's what's going on. And he's been very, very helpful. Not just to me, but I think to a lot of people throughout all this. So thank you very much for doing that, sir, as you have for the last couple of months with us. Okay, there was a story that really did catch my attention here about ADHD patients, attention deficit disorders, and hyperactivity disorder, being assigned to video games to try to treat them. And all I could think about was, isn't that what causes ADHD? Well, how does this work?
You're actually onto something, Ro, truly. I always look at these psych studies with some degree of healthy skepticism. The idea briefly behind the study, just to be clear, is there is a game that was developed specifically to treat ADHD suffering boys in particular, called Endeavor RX. And the idea was that it would help these boys sustain attention by memorizing the threats in the game, like fire and spikes and bad guys. And on the whole, it showed to be somewhat successful in doing so. But there are a whole bunch of elements of ADHD, and I think this might be what you're getting at, that aren't really accounted for in the study. So it makes one wonder whether this is really true. First is, kids want to play games. They don't necessarily want to do math or whatever they're assigned in school, but they want to play the game. And there's no anxiety or very low anxiety involved in gaming, whereas a lot of the things where kids experience sustained attention problems requires and entails a certain degree of anxiety. And many in my field, myself included, feel like ADHD is at least in part a remnant of anxiety issues. It doesn't just stand alone.
Oh, so they generally come together, is what you're saying?
Exactly. With anxiety maybe taking the lead, right? So, in other words, if you're anxious enough, you're going to have a difficult time really attending to tasks that are complex.
Mm-hmm. And then that cycles on itself, essentially. And then you begin,
exactly.
you get more tense because you can't finish the task or whatever it happens to be. You can't stay on track.
Right. So as the task goes on, your performance in all likelihood tends to deteriorate. The other element of the game that you might find interesting is it assumes that a kid is playing games for 25 minutes a day. And if you talk to any parent of any teenager...
25 minutes? The 25 minutes is the number of when they're not playing the game, not when they are playing the game. And that's to go to the bathroom or to get something to eat, right? It's hot pocket time and then back up to the game.
I think you've got a pretty good beat on this.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, I raise kids and I was once a child. Now, it's interesting because when, you know, back in my day, you know, video game was Pong, and that was the video game that really turned me off of all the idea of video games. But now video games are so amazingly robust in terms of the visual of it and your interactivity in it and how it feels, but very much like it's a virtual experience. And now they've got the, you know, you can put the virtual reality headsets on and you actually work and walk in the environment of these. It's insane how realistic they are.
It's insane. They're incredibly impressive. Really, if you can remove yourself from the idea that this drives us crazy as parents, when I've had to play a number of video games just to be familiar with them, mm-hmm. and name the game that's been developed in the last 10 years, Call of Duty or Fortnite or any of the sporting games, all of them are amazing in exactly the way you're describing. You know, when we think about Pong in that one dimension versus like you develop, you're a character, you're actually a guy in the movie who's actually shooting people, and it's really consumptive, and most of the time, in fairness to the kids, they're talking to friends. So when they're wearing a headset, they're talking to friends, they're strategizing. So it's not one dimensional. It's not like they're just sitting there flatly playing a game. Oftentimes they're like working together and playing together. And so it kind of walks this line between something that, you know, is just like a more time in front of the screen, just wasting time watching The Office, versus like being with your friends and actually doing something that is somewhere along the lines of productive and developing some cognitive skill set. So, you know, it's a difficult thing as a psychologist just to say, these are bad. We need to limit these entirely in our kids' lives.
But some are bad and some are not bad. And we'll talk about that on the other side. And we'll get some phone calls in 312-981-7200. Dr. Duffy's with us. He's our team psychologist. He helps us with all of our angst. He could help you with your angst, but primarily in terms of raising kids, because I think this is really an important part of what is going on, especially now. Kids are stuck. The e-learning thing, as we learned last week, didn't really work. Everybody thought, oh, well, we'll try this. And maybe it wasn't. They were lying to us while they were doing it, saying, oh, no, this is working great. And then it turns out it didn't work at all. So kids were also playing video games and all that. And yeah, how do you get them off of that? You know, you tell them be on the screen, but then don't be on the screen. So we'll come back. We'll get some phone calls. 312-981-7200. Dr. John Duffy's with us. Here's Lauren Lapkin. Dr. John Duffy is with us. He's our team shrink. And he's been very, very, very helpful in terms over these last couple of months, helping us navigate some of the emotional pieces here. It's really, really been a tough time. And right now we feel like we're on the verge of getting back to normal. But there's actual really PTSD assigned to this, because people's lives changed so much. And it was so scary for that deep tunnel period of time when, you know, you're seeing the stories of the hospitals and constantly you turn on the news and all you see are ventilators and breathing tubes and thinking, oh, my God, is that going to be me next, or, you know, whatever. That's just it was a horrifying period of time. As people are getting back to normal, there still is the fear, though, that this thing comes back, because more people now know people who've actually had this, doctor, and it's hard to adjust to.
It really is, because you're right. PTSD is the right label when you think about literally what post-traumatic stress is. And yet also what we're going through is this ongoing traumatic stress, because we're somewhere in the middle of the story here. And when I talk to people, I can sense that they're idling high. There's a lot of anxiety and there's a lot of fear about the second wave, the third wave, what's that going to look like? And you're right, this idea that, you know, I know people who have had it, I know maybe some of us know people who have died from it, and that this is all far from over. This is unlike anything we've experienced probably in our entire lives, and certainly for young people, anything close. And so it's hard to get a gauge on just how traumatized we are person by person, and how this is going to play out over the long run in terms of how many people are going to need actual treatment for this and how many people are going to be anxious and develop some symptoms of OCD coming out of this. I think it's going to be quite complicated in the, you know, months and years to come.
I'm just hoping for it. It all ends in the sun comes up like a horror movie, you know, when it's all over and it's like it's morning and everything is okay again. All right. Let's go back to the video games, because this is real. This really is the moment where people's tastes are changing, their lifestyle is changing, how they entertain themselves is changing as a result of all this. And video games are now surpassing feature films as revenue sources in Hollywood every year. And they spend, you know, sometimes they spend 2-3 times what they would on a big budget film to make these video games, because there's so much technology and there are so many artists that have to actually put these things together. They're very expensive projects. And as you pointed out, there are some good ones and there are some bad ones. And I want to talk, and we'll talk to parents as well, 312-981-7200, about this and what they're seeing, what is working, what is not working for the kids, or they have questions for you, doctor, about how to get the kids off the box. That would be, you know, that always does happen. But when parents should think about the video games that their kids are choosing, are there some titles that are, even though, you know, there could be, you know, first shooter games and things like that, are there some titles that are better than others?
Absolutely. I mean, you really want to watch for, on the whole, you want to watch for games where there are, you know, specific, like, warnings on the box, you know, and a lot of games, the Call of Duties, will have a warning about, like, you know, that this is incredibly violent and not particularly skill building. But when you get to games like Minecraft, I'm not sure if you're familiar with this game, but Minecraft, Fortnite, there's a few games, even some of them that have a first shooter component element to them, that are skill building and are not the worst thing for kids. Minecraft, you actually build a little world, and it's so impressive sometimes what kids actually can create in these worlds. You know, like they will spend hours and hours and hours creating these spaces and these rooms. And Animal Crossing is another game that even older kids are going back to, even though this is intended for younger kids, just to kind of create these spaces. And I think a lot of us in our generation roll our eyes at this idea that, you know, like, you should be out creating something real. But this is the age our kids grew up in, right? So video games is a big part of the culture. And for the last 4 months, it's been almost their entire culture. So a lot of their energy has gone toward building things in these games that they feel good about, that they're proud of, that they work really hard on. And when you actually pause, and I don't think many parents do this, and take a look at some of the work they create in some of these games, it's pretty impressive. And you can kind of, if you understand the skills that your child is developing, you might find ways to channel that into other areas of their lives, too. But you do want to watch for those kind of warnings that suggest, like, this is for a mature audience only. Yeah, the warning of M is a scary one.
Yeah, but that's going to drive the kids to them, doesn't it? I mean, first of all, just for the sure. brand names themselves. You know, you talk about, you know, whether it's Halo or any of the you know, the super violent ones. That's the kids are playing that, and as you point out, they're playing it in groups. Right? It's a social yep. experience for them. So they're going to want to do that. Yep. And like, it was the same thing when they started putting warning labels on records back in the 1980s. Right? And the parents. Resource Council or whatever the thing was called, where they were just trying to get certain songs they figure were making people into killers, right? The trench coat mobs and things like that were as a result of the music that they were listening to. And I never really believed in that. And I also am not 100% sure I believe that the video games are causing that violence anyway. If kids are violent, they're going to be violent, is my philosophy on that. Am I wrong?
No, I actually agree with you completely. There are some problematic things about video games, especially, you know, in excess. They're aggravating and agitating, and they can be somewhat addictive and depressing. But no, do I think that video games in and of themselves make kids violent? Not at all. And you're absolutely right also, Ro, that putting that mature for mature audiences only, it does work the same as it did for music back in the day, and kids are going to be drawn to it. And the truth of the matter is, and this is a hard truth, I think, for parents to hear, is that your kids, in all likelihood, even if you don't have Call of Duty or Halo in your home, they're going to be able to play it. They will play it at somebody else's house. Right. Somebody has an older brother, an older sister. Somebody will know somebody who has access to it. So to put your head in the sand and just tell your kids this is off limits, I think this is a mistake these days in most areas, in video games in particular. I think to get to know them a little bit, to give your kids some guidelines, and to talk about the reality. You know, like, you really can't in Call of Duty, you cannot drive through Los Angeles and start shooting people. And, you know, I think that's a reasonable thing. But most kids are well aware of the fact that this is fantasy and very much like watching a Hollywood movie, and the separation between reality and fantasy is not lost on them. So I think it doesn't bring them into a space where they're likely to be dangerous or to be violent in any way.
Right, because the consequence, kids who have that problem, the kids who end up becoming violent or trying to shoot somebody or successfully shooting somebody is a psychological profile of somebody who doesn't understand consequences. And most of us understand consequences. Isn't that, I assume that that's the big difference here. And that's why I was always troubled by the idea that a record or a particular song or a band or whatever it is, kids can get culty about all kinds of things. Adults can get culty about all kinds of things. And it's really just on the spectrum of how deeply people inhale on whatever that substance is. So
exactly. Yeah, right.
That's why you have a job, Dr. John Duffy. I think that's my point. All right. Well, thank you very much. We'll talk to you again. Dr. John Duffy, he's the team psychiatrist. I think that Lauren and Kevin have to see you next. So I know I've taken up my time. This is where he leans over, looks at his clock. We're going to have to end right now, but I can put you down in the book for next week. Thank you, doctor. Appreciate it. We've got the news from Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. And then Brian Bickle joins us in 2 minutes.